فيصلح الدمار نعيم. So we have in the Chumash that after Yaakov Avinu fights with the angel, there's a prohibition not to eat from the Gid HaMasheh, not to eat from that particular piece of that artery. Okay. So he says as follows: we know that the Ravid wrote in his commentary to the Sefer Yetzirah. Sefer Yetzirah is the book which Avraham Avinu wrote about the creation of the world, how God created the world. So the Ravid says over there that the word Ashan, because it says Hafinai Ashan Kulo, Hafinai was smoking. It says the word Ashan, Ayin Shin Nun, represents Olam, Shana, and Nefesh. That God created the world, and the whole Sefer Yetzirah works with this fundamental concept, that God created the world in triplicate. Whatever he did, he made three, whatever thing he created three different ways, or three different expressions of the concept. And these three things are in the Olam, in the real world, in Shana, in time, and in Nefesh, and in person. So every concept, every spiritual concept which was created by God, it comes into this world three ways. It's in the human person, in his personality, it's in time, and it's in place. That's a very fundamental concept of the Kabbalah. It's very, very important. It's probably one of the most important concepts in the Kabbalah, is this concept. In other words, because the average person thinks that spiritual things are in the world of the spirits, or in the world of ideas. But the Kabbalah says a very big chiddush, that it's not just in the Kabbalah says that spiritual concepts are not just spiritual concepts are not limited to the world of spirit or idea, but they also go into time and into place. There's so many things involved with this concept that it's so basic to Hasidus and Kabbalah. This is one of the things he's going to work on now. It's very important, Maranayim, because he develops this fundamental concept. Okay, so he says, Kemoshi Yesh Benefesh Koma. Just like, now we know, for example, the body, we know that the human body has 248 limbs and 365 arteries and veins. Gemara says that the 248 mitzvahs that say represent the 248 limbs of the human person. His fingers, his eyes, his nose. You can divide the body into 248 parts. And then in terms of arteries and the veins, the sinews, the muscles, tendons, the things which hold the body together, there are 365 major underpinnings of the body. So that's mitzvah lotasei. The mitzvah shasei are the evarim, and the mitzvah lotasei are the gidin. So this is also true, he says, about the world. In other words, just like it's true within the human body, now also it's true in the world of spirit. So in the world of spirit, we have 248 mitzvah shasei and 365 mitzvot lotasei. These are our spiritual concepts, ideas, 248 things I should do, 365 things we should not do. So these represent certain spiritual concepts. But then it's in the human body itself, in the guf, is 248 and 365. So if I do a certain mitzvah, I'm fixing that limb in the body. I'm giving it its kedusha. Like the, so, for example, the concept of doing mitzvah saseh is basically to physically fix my body. Now that's just, I do the mitzvah saseh, so there's some kedusha, some spiritual significance. Certainly there is. But beyond that is a physical significance. That's why the big tzaddikim do not have to go to doctors. No. The major tzaddikim in the time of the Nevi'im, even kings of Israel, David HaMelech, people like that, Chizkiyahu HaMelech was sick, but there's also in Tanakh. He was sick, so the Navi told him what he had to do in terms of tshuva. He did tshuva and he became well. Even though he goes to a doctor, the Navi said it's very bad. He said, no, it's stupid to go to a doctor. Stupid. Because all doctors are dealing with is with the external root of the disease. And not really getting to the source of the disease. The source of the disease is a spiritual flaw. That spiritual flaw always, always, every person.
So a person
who's sending out the astrology again. Not astrology, they're playing games with this. They don't really know. The tzaddik, the Navi knows, and sometimes a major tzaddik, a big mekubal, a big Jewish Rebbe, will tell you, you know, this avera causes this particular sickness. If you fix this avera, you do a certain mitzvah, you fix your body. It's recorded. We have so many stories in our tradition, from the Gemara, from the Tanakh, the Gemara, later on by the Hasidic Rebbes, hundreds and thousands of stories where the rabbi just said, do this or that, it's a spiritual thing, do a mitzvah, do it. Stop doing a certain avera, and the person gets well. This is not just good luck, or the rabbi happens to make a deal with God that, you know, I'll get him to do this mitzvah, you do me a favor, send an earth for a shalema. No, no. It's a direct cause and effect. This mitzvah is directly the mitzvah for that particular limb. If he does that mitzvah, this limb will be healthy. If he doesn't do it, well, it's not mislike. It's like they want to get now medicines, which they say for cancer. They're trying to get what they call a bullet. That you put this into the body, so because today when the cancer medicines attack all the cells, so they're killing good cells together with bad cells, which is a very tricky business. You almost have to kill them completely in order to kill off the cancer. It's hard stuff, chemotherapy. They want to develop what they call a bullet. You take this medicine, it won't kill any healthy cells. It'll just kill the cancer cells. That will be a miraculous cure for cancer, a bullet. So but what this is, we have the bullets, we know exactly. This mitzvah goes directly to that limb, it'll fix it, it'll be healthy. If it's a broken leg, the tzaddik can know. Which tzaddik knows what? I don't know. I'm not so involved with it myself. I wish I was. But the tzaddik can know because the human body has 248 parts. 365 sinews. These represent assays and most assays. So if you would know which assay goes through which part of the body, you could fix the body directly. You don't need, because all the illnesses are just coming because of the fact that the body, the person sinned. So there, and most probably with this limb, with this particular limb, he sinned. And therefore, he got sick. That's a result. It's spiritually weak. Spiritually weak, yes. No. Lamam wrote a regular medical book. A book which would say this disease for this disease, yes, that they could do. And it's probably an individual thing also. It's probably a combination of general versus like any medical situation is a general and a particular, so it would be John particular. Yes.
And what about the guy? What kind of mitzvah they have?
Seven mitzvahs. The guy has seven. Well, they have a lot of details on those seven mitzvahs, so, and those details affect every part of the body. Yeah.
Does the tzaddikim know that they have this power? Like, say, on the vulture, because there's a woman to be. So does he know that he has the power to say, if you have this, because you have this?
Yeah.
So all the tzaddikim now are 36, they know that they have the power?
I think so. I don't know. I never really discussed it with them, but I would think so. Once I asked the Baba Chevy, he seemed to say he doesn't know that he has the power. He says, I just say things and it happens. It's not as if I know. That's what he told somebody, but I don't know if it's a reliable story. Because he had told the present Prime Minister Sharon, when he was 15 years ago, he came to visit him, he said, I'm leaving tonight on the plane. So he said, so the rabbi says, don't take the plane tonight. It's not such a big rush. It's late, you know. Go, came to me late. I'm going to keep you late. Take tomorrow's plane. That particular plane that he did not go with because the rabbi told him not to was hijacked to Algeria by PLO terrorists. So had he been on the plane, he would have probably been killed. So they asked the rabbi. I heard the story from a Lubavitcher. I don't know if it's true or not. So he said that they asked the rabbi later, did you know the plane was going to be hijacked? He said, no, I just saw it was late, and why should he not talk to me more? So I told him, stay and you take tomorrow's plane. Now, but he certainly did something astounding if he was able to save him from a hijack. Well, for example, you can speak to this fellow, you know, Moshe, the Lubavitcher, the short guy with the beard. The diamond's up front in the base medrash, Myers on the right side. No, he's a regular guy. So he told me 2 days ago, he called me up, says, Rabbi Reichman, I went to Shabbos to somebody for Shabbos, and they told me the problems were they had triplets. He said that they had no children, and they went to the rabbi for a blessing, and he says, here, take $3, in 9 months, you have a celebration. 9 months to the day that they got the $3, he gave birth to 3 children. He told me the story 2 days ago. So did the rabbi from Lubavitch know what he was doing, or was it just a feeling, or was it just he was giving a blessing? And he hoped that God would listen. Or did he know that he would give her the $3 and she would have triplets in 9 months? But it's a fact. He was there on Shabbos. You can also go to the family, speak to them, and ask them. So these things are happening. They're happening all the time.
So
the tzaddikim aren't doing things.
If they know all this, if they have this power, why don't they go over a little story, you know, put a sign saying, you know, over on the whole Jews that believe in it, they'll go there.
That would
prove them that it works. Wouldn't they discern the Jews more better than people get sick? Or when they get sick, they'll be able to put your blood cells, the shirt will come sooner. Do you know why they go to
No, because it's apparently the tzaddikim know that it's supposed to be very, very limited, that this stuff is supposed to be very limited, because apparently there's a very big tendency among people who have the Yetzer Hara, the average person has the Yetzer Hara, to misuse this stuff. In other words, to just turn it into black magic and to avoid the responsibility. I mean, God is giving a sickness. He wants you to do tshuva. He doesn't want you to go to a rabbi, and the rabbi will say some magic words, and now you're going to be healthy. It's not right. It removes the whole concept of choice, responsibility, bechila. That's why we're in this world, to make choices. Now, once in a while, the tzaddik will make a miracle like that, because he knows when and how he should do it. He knows for whom and when. He doesn't do it for, it's very rare. The Bible said he had thousands of people coming through begging him to do things like that. He didn't do that for all thousands of people. I was online. I take it with me in the Bible said, I was online once to go get a dollar, and I was standing behind 2 Sadnu Hasidim who were anti-Lubavitch in the worst way. So they were talking, one was talking to the other. So one of them said, this is my first time here. And Ellen says, well, this is my third time here. He says, why are you coming? He says, the reason I'm coming, I'll tell you a story I have with my brother. My brother in Israel, and I was just listening to them. So this fellow says to him, my brother in Israel was losing his sight. All of a sudden, he started not to see well. And it was getting worse and worse and worse. He came to the doctors in Israel, and they said to him, there's no hope for you. Your eyes are going blind, and there's nothing in the world which can help you at all. And his eyes were really good. Like he was like 80-90%. He was mamish going blind. So they said, we heard the Babavitch Rebbe, he's a miracle worker. We'll go to him even though we're shopping. So we went and I went and took my brother here. My brother came and the Rebbe gave us the dollar and he told me he had this problem. His mamish almost finished with his eyes. He can't hardly see. So, and they said another couple of weeks he'd be totally blind. The Rebbe says, don't worry about it. If it's a good eye doctor, go to this eye doctor and she'll help you. Okay? So we called up the eye doctor, as the Rebbe told us, and made the appointment for a week later. We came into the eye doctor. The eye doctor put in drops into the eyes, and my brother came in, he was almost totally blind. The eye doctor put drops into the eyes, and I put drops to make the eyes stay in place, like all eye doctors do. Put his eyes, put his head into the eye machine to look at that, and an examination. Examined, and says, you know, it'll take about an hour for the drops to wear off, and after the drops wear off, you'll see the way you were seeing before. He told me to put in the drops. He's examining him. He says, I don't know, people, why are you coming to see me? He says, these eyes are perfect. He can see 100%. My brother says, I walked in, I was almost blind. He says, let the drops wear off. I'm telling you, the eyes are perfect. The drops wore off. My brother could see 100% at 20/20 vision. So when the Rebbe did that to my brother, whenever I'm in New York, I come to the Rebbe. Even though I was born Shatma, I became a Lubavitch. I heard this story myself. He says, I'm a Shatma, but I go to Lubavitch Rebbe. He saved my brother's eyes. The doctor says, I don't know why you came to me. Your eyes are perfect. There's nothing wrong with them. We walked in there, the eyes were blind, basically. Sat in a chair, put in a few drops, which is nothing. Like I, you know, saw the witness to Rebbe, to tell you that story, and just thought over on Shabbos, another story, which I heard myself, also from an eyewitness. Now this was mamish an eyewitness of Lubavitch Rebbe, literally eyewitness. I got another story with the witness to Rebbe. The witness to Rebbe was in Muncie. The witness to Rebbe, so the witness of how he, what kind of a tzaddik the witness was, the witness was sent by Stalin up to Siberia, so he lived for 40 years in Siberia until he was finally freed, when Gorbachev started easing things up. The Rinnitzer used to go to the mikveh three times a day in Siberia, to Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv. In Siberia there was no mikveh, all you had was a frozen lake. So cut a hole in the ice every day. In the morning, when it's still dark outside, cut a hole in the ice, go under the ice for mikveh, for Mincha, and for Maariv. That's how he lived for 40 years in Siberia. Once he was went under the ice, and he lost the hole. He said to God, please let me get out of this. If you get out, I'll do whatever you want. So all of a sudden he found the hole, he got out. So he says, since then he says, whatever God wants me to do, I have no choice. So he was at a bris milah. He was a moel. He came to America, he was a moel. I've got a couple of stories with him. He came to bris, he was a moel. And he did the bris, and the parents start screaming because the baby turned blue and then white, and the baby stopped moving, stopped crying. They start screaming, you killed that baby, the crazy rabbi. He jumped on the baby, put his talus over the baby, laid there for 5 minutes. All of a sudden you heard the baby crying. Opened up the talus, the baby was fine. So they asked him later, what happened to that dog? He says, The baby taka died.
What?
The baby died. It was unfortunate. The baby died at the bus. I had to, but the parents going crazy. I fell down on the baby. I told God, I went under the ice tree for 40 years in Siberia. You have to do this for me. This baby has to come alive. And the baby came alive. This I heard from three eyewitnesses. Over there. It was a famous thing. Then there was another story of the literature also with a child who was born, couldn't hear. He was born deaf. This I also heard from actually the father told me the story. Took him to the literature. He was about, at that point, 12. He hadn't heard one word in his whole life. The doctor said, impassable. The literature said, this I heard from the doctor. The literature says, go to Dr. Goldstein in Queens. Dr. Goldstein is a Y.U. graduate. He's an ear doctor. He used to give drops for the Rav. He used to hang around by the Rav. So he used to come to the Shia. So I know him. You can speak to him about this story. So he said, go to the doctor in Queens. He's going to help you. So I said, okay. So he took his kid, 12-year-old, hadn't heard a word from the day he was born. The doctor said, impossible. Send him to this regular ear doctor in Queens for a man. Dr. Samson says, he said to himself, he says, there's no way I can make this child hear. There's nothing there. Can't do it. He's born like this. But the father says, the rabbi, the minister rabbi told me to come to you. You're the one in the world who can save him. So the doctor said, okay, he wrote a prescription for drops. Drops for sugar drops. Drops of sugar, water with sugar. No medicine at all. He said, what kind of medicine? There's no medicine for this. But the Zebra said, so he wrote a prescription for water with sugar. So take this three times a day for a week. Okay?
A week later,
the child went to the hospital. He could hear 100%. Now, okay, you're talking about the real medicine. This was the doctor himself said this was nothing. He said to me this was complete waste. Medically, it was worthless. So what happened was like this. They took him to the hospital, said he hears perfectly. So the doctors in the hospital, the biggest doctors in New York in the Ear and Eye Institute, they called up Dr. Goldstein. They say, you have to come down to the hospital because you cured someone born deaf. You have a method to cure such a person. We're going to put this into the medical literature so that everybody else can start doing this. So he says, I didn't do anything. So you have to come down and talk to us. He came down. They had all the ear doctors, biggest ear doctors in the world, all were there. And they said, how did he do this? So I tell you the truth. It came from the rabbi. The rabbi said that I could do it. I don't know what to do. So I took plain water, mixed some sugar into it, and put it in. So they said, so what did he do? How would you say he was cured? He was cured by the rabbi's blessing. So he put it into the literature of the ears. Cured by rabbi's blessing. That's now official in New York State medical records that there's a cure called rabbi's blessing. I'm just telling you true story, but I'm telling you, but the rabbi don't. He asked me, why don't they do this all the time? They don't do it all the time because they know when they want to do it. I have no idea when they decide that they want to help a certain person, a certain child. I don't know. They know why they have to do it at certain times and why not. But they have powers, there's no question about it. They have certain powers. Well, it doesn't mean they can do it every time. They know when and where and how they should do it. I myself, as I said, have spoken to eyewitnesses for the Baba Tzvevi and Rivna Tzvevi. So, and Rabbi Wilson also told me, was an eyewitness, he says, an eyewitness for the Stalinist Rebbe's itself, the old Stalinist. He said that by the Stalinist, miracles would fall out of his pockets. He just saw miracles falling out of his pockets all the time. So Tzaddikim can do many things, but this is So I'm not interested in turning us into running around to tzaddikim. You should read the books. You read books. You'll see plenty of stories. I mean, I have a friend of mine was a guy by the Baba Sali for 18 years, and he's a very, very honest man. He's a big Talmud Chacham. In front of this, he's a big Talmud Chacham. And he wrote the book. He has in that book, Baba Sali, miracles he saw all the time. People who were sick getting well, people without children getting children, all kinds of stories. The tzaddikim can decide when and where. They do, 1,000 people line up and they do it for a couple. They don't do it for all 1,000. They do it for one or two. Why? I don't know. They know. They know when and where they should do it. Therefore, it's not a derech to run around the tzaddikim. I'm going to bring out another. My point is that they know the connection between the spiritual world and the human body. The human body gets the point of Ra'anayim. I'm interested in the theory. The Ra'anayim is saying from the Sefer Yetzirah. The Sefer Yetzirah was the book Avraham Avinu wrote about Kriyat Olam, how God created the world. And there Avraham Avinu told us that God created the world in triplicate. There's place, time, and person. The human body and the human soul are reflections of time and place. If the spiritual goes into the human soul, the human body, time and place. So now, that's why, of course, one of the things is distinguished, cures and so on, but it has a lot of other manifestations. So therefore, for example, I'll give you another very simple thing. Anything which I touch, anything which I have, has to do with my spiritual self. It's a very important Hasidic idea. I'm not just sitting in this chair because I have to sit in a chair. I'm not just walking down the street because I have to walk down the street. It's a physical expression of my spiritual soul. Everything I do is spiritual. There's nothing in this world which is not Kedusha. The Kedusha is in me, it's in my chair, it's in my place, and everything is connected to the source of Kedusha. So that's why he says this week's Pasha has that book. What happened to this week's Pasha? It says the Jews should not eat the Gid Anoshe. They're not supposed to eat the Gid Anoshe. This particular thing with Yaakov Avinu fought with the angel, so he pulled his Gid. He wanted to explain, like, no. That actually, we should know that the Gid Anoshe, this particular tendon, is in the physical world, represents in time Tisha B'Av. It represents the damage which Esav does to Yaakov. In other words, we have a spiritual conflict with Esav. Esav are the forces of evil. So there's a conflict between good and bad. Sometimes the bad has a victory, a quasi-victory, right? That's part of life. It doesn't always win. Or if it does win, it doesn't win without any damage, without any losses. There are losses. So Yaakov Avinu went through a very big confrontation with evil, with the Shah of Esav, the Shaddan. He won the spiritual battle, but he walked out limping. In other words, there was some damage spiritually which happened. Rashi says it's a dark smack, that out of Yaakov Avinu come Jews who unfortunately leave Judaism. It's a phenomenon even today, that some Jews are bound. Where does this come from? This comes from Yaakov's confrontation with the Malach. Over there, it said that Esav, the forces of evil, the anti-Torah forces, do win partial victories. We don't always win completely. That was Yaakov's limp. And that's why the Gid Anoshe. The Gid Anoshe is that, and food. It's the victory of Esav. And in Zman, in time, it's Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the day that Esav won, because he destroyed the temple. And both temples, first and second. It says that Edom was involved, sure. Right. True, later. So it says like this. This is the opposite of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the source of life in the world. It's only good. Yom Kippur is a day with good as total victory. There's no evil at all in Yom Kippur. It says in the Zohar, the Shatan, He's not allowed to open his mouth in Yom Kippur. In fact, if he does open his mouth, he's only singing the praises of the Jews. Yom Kippur is the day which is only good. And Tisha B'Av is the day which is really only bad. It's the one day of the year where the other side has the victory. It's a limping. It's the Gid HaNasha. The Gid HaNasha of Shman is Tisha B'Av. It's absolutely Yom Kippur. So that's why he says that in this pasuk, Halkein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael es Gid HaNasha. Es means Aleph Tov. Aleph Tov is Tisha Av, backwards. Av Teh. Av Tisha. The ninth of Av is the Gid HaNasha. It's the day in which Esav has the power. It's a very, very, very scary day. It's a very scary day. It's a very, very distressful day. So, that's why the Gemara says, if someone eats on Tisha B'Av, it's like eating the Gid HaNasha. Gemara says, oh, it's in the Gemara, it's the Zohar. The Zohar says, eating on Tisha B'Av is like eating the Gid HaNasha. Because it's the part of the reality where the evil force has his victory. He has a victory. He has a victory, partial victory. Of course, Yaakov has a total victory, but with a price. So we should know. Oh, so he says, "But Yaakov ish imo adalos hashachar." Says that the angel fought with him until the morning. This is symbolic. It means during our present time, we have this battle with this arch enemy. But there will be an alos hashachar. There will be a morning where will we end. The battle will be over. So that's why it's a battle. You shouldn't think that the battle has ever really ended. It just goes on and on until we get to alos hashachar, until we get to the morning. And okay, there's more and more, but we don't have much time. So, Rabotai, as we said, we want to mitzvah Shem. We know, we have a lot of spiritual battles, good, evil, or everybody in their own way. We shouldn't expect to have total victory without losses. It's Muhammad. And in Muhammad, unfortunately, there are losses. Yaakov has a match, he walks out, he has an injury. That's okay. That's okay. That's just the way life is. Life has that. You win some, you lose some. And I was just actually talking to my wife last night about it, because over the years, you know, with Talmidim, I put a lot into Talmidim. And then, many Talmidim give me nachas over the long run. They go really very far spiritually, so I have a lot of personal happiness. But then, every so often, unfortunately, there's a Talmid, I invest a lot of emotional, spiritual energy, and then years later, there's a disappointment. Drops out, whatever, goes off. It happens. But that's the way it is. The battle is not only victory. Sometimes there's a loss. It doesn't mean that because of the loss, we shouldn't continue to fight. You have to continue. You have to always continue. And hopefully you win more than you lose. Yaakov Avinu was walking, so he beat the angel. He got the blessing, but he was limping. There was losses. He had a limp. And so we just have to keep on following the derech of our forefather Yaakov. Keep up the struggle as we go through the year. It's so important. The bow tie. We started Tishrei was unbelievable, so strong. And Chesed was a very tough month, very tough for Baruch Hashem. Came through Chesed. Now Kislev is much more, almost by Hanukkah, Kislev is much stronger. When we hit Hanukkah in another week or so, Mamash would be so high. So the thing is, all this part of the ongoing battle, the worst thing in the world is to quit. Someone who quits the battle is stupid. He's stupid because losses you're always going to have. You have to have losses. You have to have downs. We spoke about it before. So there has to be Nefila, and then there's an Aliyah. When you come back, it's very strong. It's even stronger than before. I'm sure the next Rosh Hashanah will be stronger than the past Rosh Hashanah, 100%. And he says Yom Kippur. So don't get focused on the Tisha B'Av. Think more about the Yom Kippur. Yes?
Well, everyone has all these problems with the people who attend the Muslims or Christians never come
with the Chinese or the Indians or the other people. Good question. The answer is because they're our brothers, they're our cousins. The Muslims and the Christians are spiritual brothers of ours, like it says in this week's Pasha. Hatzaleinu no miyad, ashi miyad Esav. Say it to my brother Esav. He's a relative. He's a spiritual relative, so therefore he's a conflict of competitors. They decided to compete with us. Instead of saying, Yaakov has the truth, and he's the real Bechor, he's the one who can lead us and teach us Torah, they say, no, we have the Torah, we have the blessings. The Chinese and the Indians, they're not our relatives, they're in their own world, so they have nothing to do with us, so therefore they don't compete with us. They're completely lost, the Chinese and the Indians. They don't have any Torah at all. So hopefully they will learn from us one day, but they don't compete with us. We have no problems with them. Amu Dinu sent messengers to the east to bring the laws. So when you go to Chinese and Indian culture, you find that in the spiritual world, they have a fantastic, mystical, spiritual experience, which comes from Abraham. Because Abraham sent it out to them. And basically, he told them, because it's Abraham Avinu's teaching, so it attracts the Israelis. Torah?
Yes.
Because we religious Jews have failed to make it attractive to them. It's our fault. Because it doesn't make any sense for them to go to the east and try to get something which was a long ago gift from Abraham, and not to come to the source which they have right now in front of them here in Israel. It's unfortunate. It's because the people who have the Torah are not doing it, are not selling it, are not presenting it, getting it to them.
Well, but I have also read that
because this is being done from the right side in heaven, and the sorcery is coming from the left side or the back side. There's a front and there's a back. You have a book, this is the front cover, this is the back cover. Okay, if you take the miracle from the front, it's good. If you take the miracle from the back, it's no good. You open the book from the front, this is good. The back, no good. Same thing in heaven. Everything you have in the front, you have in the back. But the back is a twisted replication of the front.
What is the loss from the big thing, the back from the good one?
The good one is light, and the back side is dark.
I mean, is there any difference in permanency and...
The dark side will disappear eventually, and only the good side will remain. But so far the dark side is still there, and you always have to figure out, are you coming with light or with darkness?
The Rambam also writes that before the Mashiach comes, there will be a real prophecy as it will be in the old days. And one of the requirements of the person to become the Mashiach is to make a miracle.
Doesn't have to know, it says not to make miracles.
Rambam says
clearly. No, in Mishnah Torah it says clearly. He says he doesn't have to make miracles. He says in Mishnah Torah. The problem with the Lubavitcher Hasidim was that they got confused between miracles and Mashiach. Miracles are not a big deal. There are thousands of tzaddikim who've done miracles. It doesn't mean much. And even God would do miracles, did he say? They had kishas of other things. I had a priest that came to speak to us 3 weeks ago. He became Jewish. He converted. He said he was in a certain Christian sect which focused on miracles. They called themselves, what do they call themselves? The ecstatic Christians, ecstasy. So they perform miracles. Faith and this and that. He said to us, miracles are not a big deal. He says, I see priests do miracles. they're not a big deal at all. He says, I know rabbis do miracles. I know Eastern monks do miracles. Miracle's not a big deal. There's a lot of spiritual energy that people can tap into. He says, but it's a big deal in being committed to the truth. That's the spirit. Right. That's what he said. The truth. They know what they're talking about. So, don't the miracles are there, and it's okay they should be there, but it's not the basis of the religion. That's what Rambam says very often. It has nothing to do with what
they
say. Some ways yes, some ways no. To make your case, the recent Daffioni was very interesting, the last couple of Daffioni. But it was Shugis and Sinhedrin about Kishuv. So while it's saying don't do Kishuv, don't do sorcery and this and that, it does say that Rava used to study this book called Sefer Yetzirah, which is quoted here by the Mar Naim. He used to study Sefer Yetzirah every Friday. He had a Seder before Shabbos to study Sefer Yetzirah. It's a Gemara, it's a Hedron. Mentioned the book Sefer Yetzirah, yeah. And Rashi said it was Sefer Yetzirah, but it says he studied and he would make for himself every Friday a young calf, so you have fresh meat for Shabbos. He says the young calf was his, he produced it every week for Shabbos from doing a miracle, so to speak, right? So I don't know. So the Chazal don't mind telling us that certain people did different things. Yeah, literal, definitely, absolutely. Literal. Definitely literal. Absolutely. Most of the repeat times. But you see, he could not bring Mashiach. To me, I had the opposite conclusion. This guy did a miracle, that guy did a miracle, but Mashiach still didn't come. So apparently miracles is not enough.
Not the
task of
the
exactly. It's not the goal. It's just to maybe an emergency. Right. Not the will. The basic will of the world was not to have the miracles. The miracles are only an emergency. The Jews have to leave Egypt, so there's an emergency. But generally speaking, Kosher the Gugin, the Kriyat Yamsu. Right. The biggest miracle in the world is the world. That's the biggest miracle. That there is a world and it works like this is the biggest miracle. So why should God want that to be changed? You know, to appreciate his basic miracle. He wants it to operate within the world. That's why halacha is not based on miracles. Ain't something on a the rule is ain't something on a. It's good to know that there are some people who can do these things, but it's not fundamental to their religion at all. There are enough people walking around who don't believe in it at all. There are enough people here who say, I'm telling you that no rabbi ever did a miracle. Enough of the religious Rosh Yeshivas will say, no rabbi ever did a miracle, it's just wives' tales. It's a Baba Meisha. A grandmother's tale. Okay. But I spoke to the eyewitnesses, that's why I know that it did happen. And they weren't talking to impress me, they were just talking among themselves. I spoke to the doctor in Queens, he's a litvak. He told me that that's what happened. So, whatever, that's not important though. The Rambam is very strong, it's not important, it's not the basis of the religion. Even Kriyas Yamsu, the Rambam says, it's not important. The main thing is that we heard Hashem say, and Asim Anochi, that's the main thing. We heard. Wasn't a miracle to hurt.